I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 621, Wonder Woman 1984. Set your phasers for snark.
Do the plugs, because this is going to be one of those episodes.
I guess let's this movie is kind of a plug.
Yeah, it's a plug, all right. And not in the fun way.
So, that's a little insight into Joe. So,
and the return of Creeperoo.
That's not fair.
Yeah, well, hey, what he's into is his business, man.
True.
So let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously, which is why we never shut up about it. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers, where you can like the page and join the group. The activity is a little bit more interesting in the group. You can actually kind of start your own conversation and people will see it, unlike on a page. So that's the difference between the two. The group is called the League of Show Sharers because we're hoping you will share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week include Librarian Cynthia, Ralph Tribble, Travis Tewitt, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Heather Sachs, Julianne Jordan, Chris Williams, Ron Johnson, Carl Clarkson, Chris Falls, the Minorities Report Podcast, Invasion of the Remake, M.N. Miller, Geek to Me Radio, Michael Dean, Mike and Oscar, Ronnie Castle, Nerd Revert, the Movie Journey Podcast, Feel and Film, Matt Naglia, Rosa at Latina X Lens, Colby Mack, In Session Film, and the Four is a Crowd Podcast. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. And if you just want to help out a little bit more, go that extra mile, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help out, and we are appreciative extraly. So there's all that. Wonder Woman 1984. Woof.
Wow.
Gee, I will tell you right now, they are lucky they have the excuse of the pandemic and going to streaming.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this...
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
It is like a different...
The drop in quality.
Yeah.
With the same creative team.
Does it not seem like a different director took over? How could Patty Jenkins, who made the first one, which I loved, the first one is so good. So, so good.
Yep.
How is it the same people in charge of this movie? It is such a drastic change.
My new theory is that DC can only make a good comic book movie on accident. I don't think they can do it on purpose. It's like it's like when they make a good one, it's the exception to the rule, and it's almost by happenstance. It's like if you make enough of these movies, eventually one or two of them is going to be good. And I almost feel like that's what we're dealing with, because this movie is bad. I mean,
it is aggressively mediocre.
I know it's set in 1984, but was it made in 1984? Like, it,
I don't know if that was like the thing they were trying to do, was like to give it a feel of something that was made in 1984,
it doesn't feel like other than horrible computer graphics, it doesn't feel like 1984 once they leave the mall.
Well, here's what makes it feel like 1984 to me. Is if you go back and watch those older superhero movies, and really this is more of a thing of the 90s, because Batman's 89, so everything after that. But they just always kind of had this vibe of, like, they had written all the action scenes first, mm-hmm. and then they try to, like, leapfrog, create some connective tissue to get you from thing to thing after that. But
I don't think Superman feels that way.
But there's never really all that much of a cohesive flow. You know,
I think Superman 1 and 2 feel like they're
Superman 1, but not Superman 2. I don't think.
Okay.
But
maybe it depends on the cut.
Yeah, that's true too. But it, so it just feels like it's, I don't know, like it's just, it's, none of it feels, I hate to say it's real because it's a comic book movie, but like none of it feels like a real world. It's just, It's you've got your four main characters, and then everybody else is just an extra, and it just feels that way. It just tangibly feels that way. Where when you go to even a movie like the Spider-Man movies, the new ones, mm-hmm. like they don't feel that way. Like you see all the kids in the hall, and like that seems like that seems like a real lived-in world in a way that this does not. This never stops feeling like the pre-roll to a theme park ride.
Right. Yep.
Yes, when I was watching this movie, I was watching extras, and they just felt like there were, you know, you extra walk in front of the screen here. It feels so stale and stiff. Like,
there's no life to this. And here's the weird part, right, is I'm sitting there watching it with my wife, who starts crying. Like, she's crying at the scene where, you know, I don't care, we're just going to bounce around, when Steve has to give up.
Yeah.
Like, well, openly weeping. And then when she learns to fly, like, again, openly weeping. And it's like, and I looked at her and I tried to say this as nicely as possible, but I was just like, okay, I get the scene when she has to renounce her wish with Steve.
Yeah,
okay,
Katie's like, oh, that's heartbreaking. You know, like, even, like, I mean, that is the one scene where you're just like, if you could at least relate to the character, you're like, well, yeah, that really sucks. That's a tough decision.
And honestly, the only reason you relate to that scene is because of the last movie.
Yes.
Right, because of all they built. Right, of course.
That is, I have huge, okay.
Dude, she's having sex with a random dude in this movie.
That's a little weird. Steve, who is not Steve. Yeah, like, Steve, mentally, he's Steve.
Yeah, but it's just like,
not physically.
Steve's consciousness, because his body is blown up 80 years earlier or whatever, or 60 years earlier, it's like, he's okay, he's in this other body, and you only, I mean, it's pretty cheap the way that, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When I see the trailers, like, I didn't watch maybe all the trailers, but, you know, I saw clips and whatnot, and I saw Chris Pine's in the movie, and I'm like, I don't want to know anything else. I want to have it revealed in the movie. So I didn't know anything, and I guess maybe no one knew, but I'm like, okay, how are they going to bring back Steve Trevor? That's really interesting, because Chris Pine looks like he's in a good chunk of this movie, and the device they use
is terrible.
It's like, not him. It's just another dude, and she's like, I can only see you, and so we only see Chris Pine the whole time, but it's such a cheap way.
Well, not only
Chris
is that
Pine back.
Not only is that cheap, but just the whole thing that brings him back is cheap. Like, they found a plot device lamer than time travel. I wish you'd have kept him alive at the end of the last movie, but you didn't. And
you make him, like, if you want to have connective tissue, have him be the Martian Manhunter. Right? Like, if you're going to introduce him anyway, have John Stewart. I don't know, John Jones rather, accidentally see a video of Steve Trevor and take on that
body.
Right. And it would have been interesting if somehow, right?
Something
some
else
way,
besides bring a him, stupid wish.
Right. Bring him back. The way they brought him back was that only Wonder Woman sees him. We're right. only see him because she says, I can only see you, because she's talked to him for 1 minute and now she can only see him. It's like, it's just a really, really lame thing.
And
I mean,
luckily he fell into the body of someone with model
muscles.
Yeah,
right. I also have a
what they should have done if they were going to be cutesy and stupid about it. They should have used CGI to make the guy whose body he's inhabiting, because you only see him like three times in the movie, right. So they could have totally CGI'd this. They could have deep faked it. They should have made it Lyle Wagner.
Oh, that Lyle I mean Wagner. That would the, he played Steve Trevor in the show.
Yeah, he played Steve Trevor in the show that was on in the late 70s. And like,
don't worry, they got cutesy enough with the end.
They do, but like yeah. That would have been to me like that would have been a good. Wink and a nod of have him fall into that body, and then but then you don't really see it for the rest of the movie,
right?
Like I think this movie, like they think that they're like, oh, we're gonna go in a different direction and just be like this goofy comic book movie, which would have been okay if they had been,
but they didn't lean into it.
If it had been a good goofy comic book movie,
but it's just the tone is disjointed though. See, because when the movie starts off, which the beginning is horrific, the first scene you see.
Oh wait, you mean the mascara scene or the mall
yes,
scene?
The beginning.
I didn't mind that as much.
But it looked horrific. That's the problem. Is that it looked so bad? You introduced a movie. Your first scene of a movie is some of the worst CG that looks like it was done 10 years ago.
Oh my god,
it is horrible.
Yeah. It looked so, like cut scenes from what was that?
Tomb Raider?
No, what was
the PS1 version?
Was it Xena? What was the show that was
oh,
called?
Oh yeah, Xena Warrior yeah. Princess. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like
yeah.
cut scenes from Xena. Like it yeah. was like it was rough. And then they're running and having this competition, but they give you no insight as to what the actual competition is. So like
but,
you don't know if they're doing good, bad, like I don't know.
But
what,
why is Diana even involved in this?
Because she's
yeah,
the
why
star
would her
of
mom,
the movie.
Why would but, her mom but, I mean, allow like her to do doesn't her mom like not
so that's
want
the whole thing in the
to
comics,
the,
right? Is she, in the comic books her yeah, you're right, Kevin. Her mother will not allow her to compete. So what she does is she wears like a helmet. So that nobody can see her face. And yeah. she destroys the competition. And then after she's won, like her mother says, take off your helmet. Kind of like Maximus in Gladiator. Mm. And she takes off her helmet. It's Diana. And they are, and her mom is livid.
Yeah.
Because Diana disobeyed her.
Isn't that a plot point in the first movie?
I think
is that
almost
Robin
like,
Wright
yeah, Robin Wright
trained
is training
her
in secret.
Secret, yeah. So like now her mom is just like, oh yeah, just compete with the other Amazons because
this does not. This goes against like, and here's the thing: is I have read a lot of Wonder Woman comics, but there's no one story that makes me want to stay with it, right? Like, there's never been, with the exception of the Brian Azzarello run, which I think we had a guest on for our first Wonder Woman episode, and she was not a fan of that run. But I think it's the only run in comics that I stuck with up until the end. Wonder Woman, like, this does not feel like a Wonder Woman movie. This does not feel like the same character that we saw in BVS, which, as bad as that movie is, her scenes are really good. You get an idea of who she is. She's a badass in the first Wonder Woman, and in this one, she's like a lovesick puppy. And
I'll
it's
tell
like,
you what.
What are we doing? Like, this is not the same character.
I think this movie beats Suicide Squad for worst movie.
Oh, ooh.
I mean, I hate Suicide Squad, maybe. But I honestly think I would watch Suicide Squad before I watch this again.
Which one's shorter?
This is 2.5 hours, Tom.
There's
I know,
no
but
reason
that,
this
but
needs
I
to be 2.5 hours.
Suicide Squad was pretty long, too.
Not 2.5 hours. This is they could have cut 30 minutes from this movie easy.
Yeah.
This is bloated.
Yeah, this is,
for
I don't like
no
to
reason.
Me. If you're going to give it a 2 hour to a 2.5 to 3 hour runtime, you need to save
Suicide
that for your
Suicide Squad
big
was
ones.
2 hours and 17 minutes. So, like,
okay,
that's well. Not radically different. But
do you want to get out of there 13 minutes sooner?
I still think
Suicide Squad has better action, I think, than this.
I mean, it has action. This movie, like, does nothing for, like, an hour. Well. But I don't know. I still think this movie's more watchable than Suicide Squad. But, I mean, it's I mean,
the bar is pretty low.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, this felt so different from any version of the character we've seen before. You've got this Amazon princess who can't function in real life without Steve Trevor, who just, at this point, Steve Trevor's been gone for...
Well, she's functioning. She's just...
60 years?
But she's just kind of going through the motions. But, I mean, she's, you know, a whatever. What does she do?
So,
she's something.
She's like a curator of ancient artifacts for the Smithsonian.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
That's pretty much, if you're going to be a curator of ancient artifacts, the Smithsonian's pretty much the pinnacle.
No, that's fine. I have no
problem
I mean, with that.
She's functioning, but she's also just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, the light is brought back into her life when she sees, and she's Steve Trevor again.
I also don't, like, the first movie, I thought, made it pretty clear that Wonder Woman was bi. And that just
oh
that,
for sure
and that so but then like but so it's like but it also kind of feels like a cheat to be like, oh, she's bi, but she's so in love with this man that she'll never be with anybody else for 60 years, like,
right.
just seems like a and way they, to not have
well,
to
she
tell
only
that
knew,
story
she only knew Steve for a week. I mean,
yeah.
I know she really loved him and everything, but I just don't know if you would go 60 years based on, like, I feel like eventually you might move forward. I don't know. That's a pretty short amount of time.
I don't know. And
also kind of like, the people lose spouses and they move on. And eventually.
Yeah.
Like,
and she's immortal, so it's not like she's getting older.
Right. So, like, that's also kind of a thing to say to people who have lost a spouse and gotten remarried.
I didn't even think about that.
That it's like, I guess you just didn't love him enough. Because she waited 60 years and waited for a lame, stupid plot device to bring him back in her life.
A completely random
guy.
Well,
at least Steve is like, I hope that's not true at the end when she says she won't love again. Because that's the thing. They pigeonholed her into that.
And that's awful. Right? This character's supposed to be this feminist icon. And basically the movie ends with her man giving her permission to move on now that he's been dead for three generations.
I think that's one of the things that they've always kind of hinted at Diana and Clark as a thing.
Yeah, they've always flirted with that.
Because they both will outlive everyone. Right?
Oh,
like, and they don't have to hold back when they do it.
That's true. They can just go for it.
Yeah, because it's like, you know.
Yeah. No, so they were a thing. They were in the New 52. They got rid of Lois and Clark, and they put Clark and Diana together as a couple, and it was fine. Like, it made sense.
It
like,
makes perfect
Mark
sense.
Mark Waid did it. I mean, at the end of Kingdom Come, she's pregnant with his baby.
It's
like
they're the only. They're
that's
the
why
two...
it's called Kingdom Come.
Yeah, see, that's the other version. But
right.
they're the two most powerful people that don't age like normal people. So it's like.
It's only a matter. But in this, there's just so, like, as I'm watching this movie, it's unbelievable how different she is. We barely see her in the suit, which whatever.
Like
she does, the suit,
scenes of her as
the
Wonder
suit
Woman.
Doesn't make her Wonder Woman, right? But we don't see her. I mean, was it Justice League or was it the first Wonder Woman where we get that whole scene where she tears apart, like, those terrorists? Is it Justice League?
Sounds like a Justice League thing if she's tearing people apart.
I think where she jumps, like, into a building and she ends up beating up, you know, she's sliding across the floor. Oh, it is Justice League because they made a big deal about seeing her butt.
Yeah.
Like, Zack Snyder made sure you could see the curves of her butt. And it's getting to a point with DC where it's like, just stop. Like, just stop making movies or chuck this whole thing and restart it.
Well, here's the deal that I thought was really irritating. So, I mean, one of the many things, but they completely changed the tone from the first one, which if you're going to do that, that's fine, but you have to do it right. And so this movie starts off, horrible CGI aside, the point I was trying to make earlier was you start off and you see this terrible CG and you're like, oh, this is awful. What a terrible way to introduce you to this movie. You know, looking wise, the competition wasn't the problem. But then you go to the mall thing, right?
Wow.
And it's so cheesy. The action's so cheesy, but I'm of two minds here. So here's the deal. If you nail the tone and you're making a cheesy 80s movie, then make it a cheesy 80s movie the entire time. But it's so disjointed on the tone because you get this really cheesiness, but then they go back to being so serious and, you know, like a serious DC movie, but then they go back to being really cheesy sometimes. It's like, either have fun with it, either be really goofy and be like, oh, this is an homage to the old superhero stuff, right? And we're just going to cheese it up the whole time, or go back to your serious tone. But it's like, I didn't know what movie I was watching at what point, and it really got messy.
Well, and it's the complaint I have about a lot of the superhero movies is that they're a collection of scenes, not a cohesive narrative, and that's ultimately what you're saying is that, like,
right,
there's like, okay, now let's shoot the scene where this happens, now let's shoot the scene where this happens, and they string them all together, and it imitates a cohesive story, but it never really feels like an organic story being told. Like, there's not, I don't know, it's just, well, it's bad.
The cheetah stuff is supposed to be so serious and, like, heartbreaking, and that, you know, first of all, cheetah's just Selina Kyle from Batman Returns.
Right.
It's the exact same character.
She's the Riddler. She's the Riddler from Batman Forever.
Here's the story. Like,
it's the same
cheetah
thing.
Cheetah and Diana need to be the love story.
And they kind of hinted that, right?
They didn't have the courage of their convictions. But, like,
yeah,
to me, that's the story. Like,
I completely agree.
You know, but I think that they're worried about, which I get, that, like, you don't want to make it be like, oh, the spurned lesbian lover becomes the supervillain. Like, that looks like that's a commentary on.
I think you could even stick with the same story where she is enamored with Diana.
Yeah.
And Diana, and she gets the powers, everything's the same, and Diana kind of tells her, we have to give this back, and now she's pissed, because
yeah.
I think that plays a little bit differently than the spurned lover. I think her story still works, but there is an added element of them as a couple.
But I think that there's a better story there than,
I agree,
in all this Steve Trevor redux.
Well, and then you're just going to kill him off again.
Yeah.
But the deal is that works so well because we've seen it with Batman and Catwoman so much.
Yeah.
That relationship works so well, right?
Seeing
the, you know, the superhero, and then the, you know, you've got Selina Kyle who's doing her thing in normal life, and they don't necessarily know, at least right away, that one another are who they are. And then they have to struggle once they find out. It's like, how do you deal with that dynamic? And it's really interesting.
I think that the advantage that Batman and Catwoman have is Catwoman doesn't kill anybody, right?
Yeah,
like, she's just stealing. She's just stealing stuff.
Yeah,
which isn't that, you know, on the Batman scale is like, all right, you know, you're lucky you're wearing that skin tight suit. Otherwise,
well,
they'd take you to
also,
jail.
Also, she steals diamonds. So, like,
right, she's stealing art,
and
you know?
She's stealing from people who can afford to lose it. So, like, it's easier to be like to have fun with the Catwoman character because she's not killing people, and the people she's stealing from, you know, they always make sure that they show you that they're really pompous rich people.
Correct.
They're not even nice rich people.
Where Cheetah is like one step away from murdering people.
Yeah, she's like the Punisher and Leopard Print.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I know Cheetah,
like,
Print, but it felt redundant to say it that way.
Like, my favorite parts of this movie were the villain parts. I mean, I really, aside from the writing of this movie was not on par to do them justice, but I thought that Kristen Wiig was good, mm-hmm. with what she was given. I liked the character. I liked her motivations. You know, the CG obviously was not good at all. But
you mean her as the cheetah? I didn't think that was awful. I would have much rather
they
been
did
practical,
it in the dark.
But
they did it in the dark.
They
so you
absolutely
see it.
Did.
Okay, yeah. This movie is like, oh, this Wonder Woman flying looks really bad. Let's make it in the clouds, yeah. And she's never gonna get out. Oh my god, it's like cloud, lens flare, clouds.
Right.
It's they covered this movie up because it looked so.
It is.
Terrible.
It is mind-boggling to me that we can get something like Endgame from Disney and Marvel, and Warner Brothers and DC are like, oh, I can't figure it out. It's like, what? How? I cannot figure this out. Is like, you have these two competing studios, and Marvel just, even their worst one aren't bad, right? We've said that a million times.
Yeah.
Even Iron Man 2.
Oh, I would watch Thor
2.
I'd watch
Thor
2 over
a million times over this movie.
100%.
Without question.
And, you know, and this is the thing, too, that I want to say that I know that, you know, we're probably getting halfway through this podcast, and I just want to reiterate, because we live in this world now where when three guys don't like Wonder Woman 1984, it's because they're sexist. Like, that's the assumption that people jump to, you know?
No,
it's,
I think Wonder Woman is a fantastic character.
And the
like
first
I said,
one was
I've
great.
Yes. I was tearing up during the first one. I thought those Themyscira scenes were so beautifully done in that first one. Seriously, it brought tears to my eyes. That
this felt so rushed.
Yeah.
Like, just to get it out. And it's like, why?
But I just want to make that point because we live in that world where it's like, a female superhero movie without people think you're, you know, like even Matt Reedy said it on Facebook yesterday when people were talking about how bad it was. And he's like, what is this? Is this like some kind of Proud Boys, like alt-right movement or whatever? Like, because I didn't think it was that bad. Like, even though he's joking, but seriously, when you, the mindset now is like, if you don't like something, people, at least the internet, jumps to, oh, it's a sexist thing. But it's like, you know, that's completely untrue, especially if you listen to the show.
Well, and some of the things we're complaining about, I think, are its lack of feminism, right? The fact that Steve Trevor gives her permission to move on, or the fact that she's essentially having non-consensual sex with a passed out man, or a man who's no longer inhabiting his physical being. If the genders were reversed on that, people would be
it'd be flipping out.
Yeah, she is serious. Like, this guy has no control over his body. First of all, where does his spirit go, right? Like, where is this dude?
Yeah, because the whole time I'm like, well, wait, if Steve Trevor stays around, like, what about this dude's life you just stole?
Yeah, right.
They took over this guy's life, so we don't even know where he is. He's not getting to live his own life, so who knows what's happening there. And then Diana has sex with this guy who we know looks like this guy, so he doesn't look like Steve. So she's now had sex with this dude in his body and all that stuff. So, like, when they see each other later, I'm like, yeah, you two had sex. Like,
right.
Really
and
strange.
There was, like, a weird moment where I was like, is she going to ask him out? Because that's even weirder.
I thought that's where we were headed, too. Like,
yeah.
Well, that's what they seem to be setting up, because now she can move on, and it's like, oh, well, I kind of...
So now she can move on with the guy who her dead boyfriend's body took, like,
it's
spirit
creepy.
Took over?
It's
like,
creepy.
That's, it's weird.
I also didn't like the way that they presented anyone who flirted with her as a complete and utter asshole for doing it. Like,
yes.
There's a difference between being pushy or not taking no for an answer and making a romantic overture towards someone at a cocktail party, right? Like,
right,
you're at a cocktail party and you flirt with somebody and the movie paints this guy like he's the biggest cock in the world. Like, and it's just like, wait, people are attracted to each other and sometimes they end up in romantic relationships. Like, that's how it works. Like, it's not like he's this, like,
this movie went way too over the top in that whole thing.
The guy in the park deserves to get his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
But the guy at the party.
But even then, like, the guy in the park was, like, so over the top cartoony rapist. That it was just like
the fact that he shows up a second time.
Right. Like, he's just such a paper tiger that, I mean, yeah, it's fun to watch her beat his ass, but at the same time, it's just like, I don't know.
He just happens.
Maybe that's
to be
just
walking.
The privilege of me being a dude. I'm like, it just seems a little over the top and on the nose.
I can accept a drunk guy being over the top.
Yeah.
What I think is weird is when he shows back up, not in a park.
Yeah.
Like, just hanging
just
out on a street corner.
On the street,
that,
drinking some Mad Dog out of a bottle. On a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, it felt that part did feel a little bit forced with all the people that, like, no one could say anything to her about. I mean, yeah, I agree with Tom on that one, where you can't paint every single interaction as being
That's the part. I don't know. Like, the more I'm thinking about it, the more angry I'm getting. Like, Wonder Woman can take down both Superman and Batman. Right. Like, she is on par strength wise with Superman, and her fighting ability is on the level of Batman. There's no reason that she should be not. I don't know. Like, I feel like they neutered her in a way.
Spader.
Yeah, I guess. Well, not James.
James
but,
Spader.
You know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Though the James problem Spader with this, Wonder Woman. The problem with her powers in this movie is that they take them away. This is her second movie,
which could be an interesting story.
It could
right?
be.
If she has to fight from the bottom, that's a weird phrase. I did not mean it. But, like, she's the underdog.
Been hanging out at the park there, Joe?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Waiting for
Cheetah to
stroll
by? This is her second movie, and we hardly get to see her doing Wonder Woman stuff, and they took her powers away. It's
right.
Like, why tell that story when we haven't even hardly seen her? We've seen her in one kick-ass movie, and then they've taken it away. Okay.
If you're going to take her powers
they're
away.
They're regurgitating a bunch of superhero stuff, right? Like, this is the plot of Superman 2. Yeah. Superman gives up his powers in Superman 2 to be with Lois and then realizes, oh, I've made a mistake. I need him back.
Well, and she even ends up kind of fighting an evil Wonder Woman, right?
Right, like, right.
But if you're going to take her powers away, at least have the courtesy to team her up with a small boy and have Shane Black write the script.
Well, and that's what the point that I was going to get to. So you can tell this story, but here's the deal. Iron Man doesn't have powers outside of his suit, and Tony Stark is the interesting character. It's not Iron Man. He doesn't have powers. Iron Man's cool because Tony Stark invents a whole bunch of stuff. And so when you take his suits away, you still have Tony Stark. But with Wonder Woman, it's like she does all this kick-ass stuff and she has these powers. I don't know that I necessarily am wanting to see just Diana with not Steve Trevor. It's like, I wanted to see her do more kick-ass stuff like the first one. And so, I don't know.
Do I need to see her fight a giant CGI boss at the end of the movie? No. Which we got anyway.
I was like, but you're gonna.
Yeah. I want to see her. It's the same problem I have with everything else where I feel like Gal Gadot could do these action sequences. We've seen her do them. But they zoom it like in the cheetah fight, which is probably a way that they were just trying to cover up the CG for Kristen Wiig. But, like, you see her in the gold suit blocking everything with just the wings of the suit.
Where did the gold suit come from?
So, okay.
Like she goes up in the clouds, and then she comes back down, and she's got a gold suit on.
So the gold suit
was
in the beginning.
Well, she had it wrapped up, remember? She showed it. She's like, when she told the story of this thing to, I think, not Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
She it's in her, like, archaeology department or whatever, but it's wrapped up in a drape.
But that was the prize of winning that competition.
Right. I know what it is. Yeah. I just didn't get, like, it's like, it just felt like she's all of a sudden, she, like, goes up in the clouds and she comes back down. Where I'm like, where had you been keeping this thing?
I think she like went up and transformed into it. I think she just,
the
she
editing was in the Wonder makes her play like that. Like she went, you know, like, and
no, she found it, and then that was like her entrance from just coming back with it. It wasn't like she went up and, you know.
I hope they paid Alex Ross some royalties for that, because that's exactly what she wears in Kingdom Come.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like that's the last suit that she wears in the final battle of that comic.
I'm sure he got a special thanks at the end.
I'm sure he did.
But that whole fight scene was terrible because it was all in the dark. You couldn't see any of it. The one thing you could tell was that it looked terrible, but they did it in nighttime with the close-ups, like you said. And it's a real shame because the whole cheetah dynamic, I think, is an interesting one, but then it just comes down to one of those big, messy CG fights that doesn't look any good. So you've kind of undermined the entire thing they've built up the whole time to it just climaxes with that terrible thing. And then I'm like, she won't renounce her wish. Is she murdering her?
Yeah, right.
At
right.
First, she's like electrocutes her in the water. At first, I seriously thought her solution was like, well, I'm sorry, you're
fine.
Dead.
We'll just take care of this right now.
But I guess that just incapacitated her because she was strong enough to withhold it. But I think the writing is the number one detriment here. CG bad stuff aside, it's a terrible, terrible script. And
get
some
Geoff Johns out of there.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like, that dude had a great run in the early to mid 2000s. He did some stellar stuff. He did The Flash, Justice Society, The Green Lantern, all, you know, Superman. He did some great stuff.
Well, it works for Marvel. You know, they started bringing in comic book guys to Marvel and they got some good movies, and I don't know why
DC
can't.
But then they
ditched
everybody.
But why doesn't it work for DC?
Right? Like that whole Marvel brain trust got canned like right after Iron Man 2.
Yeah,
they stop bringing them in.
But I mean, but why is it? Why doesn't it work for DC? Why can't these comic guys that should know the material be able to write good stuff?
I think they've got the wrong guys. I think Geoff Johns is a big. I know that he is because he's the guy that brought back Barry Allen. He's the guy that brought back Hal Jordan. He's a big proponent of the Silver Age, which is fine, right? I get it, but that had its place, and now it doesn't have that place anymore. And I don't know. And sometimes comic guys don't transfer to film.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like, they just can't, write a film script.
Well, that might be why you have to have them as, consultants to get the accuracy of the characters and to understand the characters, and then get a really good writer that can write them properly with those motivations.
Yeah. And I don't know who that is for these, right? Like, we can't really name the writers of the Marvel stuff. Like, they don't, you're looking at like the directors and the cast, but the writers, we don't really know, because it feels like that's kind of a paint by numbers thing where they have to, Feige's kind of like the overseer of that whole thing. And then those guys figure out what Feige wants.
We've said this before. It feels very much like a TV show paradigm, right? Like, there's a showrunner that says, "Okay, this season, here's we're going to get from point A to point D, and they need to hit points B and C, and now you get them there." And then they, you know, it definitely feels like that, which is also why, you know, even though they brought in some great directors, but they've also canned some great directors, because if you want to have your own artistic vision, you know, the MCU ain't the place for it, right?
Nope.
And ultimately it's better for it, because they don't want to go from an Aronofsky movie to a Nolan movie to a, you know what I mean? Like, that's not.
No, you want to see a Marvel movie.
Right. And so Marvel's the star, and don't you forget it. And some people either are okay with that, or they love the properties because they grew up with the comic books. They love playing in this toy box, and they don't mind putting maybe their own artistic vision on the side to work within that paradigm. But that paycheck
looks real good,
and some don't. And I know that, you know, some directors have complained, because they're basically like, if you're the director, you direct everything where they're not fighting. You get to do the talky stuff. And other people come in and do the action scenes. And but honestly, like, it works. And I think it gives a lot of directors who maybe wouldn't be very good at helming the big action scenes an opportunity to direct movies like this. And I think that's what makes these movies good, is that you have talky directors directing the talky parts. You're not expecting them to be good at both, because you're going to be hard pressed to find a lot of people who are, especially to make two movies like this a year for a decade, right? So it's like, let the talkie guys do the talkie stuff, and that's why you care about the action scenes, is because the talkie stuff pulled you in. I think it's a great model.
It made me question whether or not Patty Jenkins knows how to do action. I wonder if she is, you know.
That really makes me worried for Rogue Squadron.
Well, after the first movie was so good, I wonder if she, because of the success of that, got to take over and make the decisions on more of this film, and therefore, you know, didn't have anyone else's influence, because the action is just not. The first one has so many moments, right? Like, you can remember memorable moments from the first movie. There are a lot of them, you know. A lot of it has to do with the war stuff, but there's stuff in New York, there's stuff, you know, in the war, there's stuff at the party, there's stuff like all around, there's great action sequences, you know, and there is no, what is it, No Man's Land in the first one?
I mean, that's a great scene.
There's no scene like that in this movie. The tank chase,
I think they tried to have that with the flying scene. I think that was... They were trying to make that.
Which was horrific.
Which was dumb.
It's also just like, we saw this. It's the same thing as Superman. It's the same scene as Man of Steel. Right? Yeah. Like, he walks out of the ship, he puts his hand to the ground, and he starts flying. Like, it's the same thing.
But worse in this.
Totally. And that CG's not great in Man of Steel.
No, it's worse, like, because it's... now that she can fly after a man taught her how.
Right,
like, that's what the scene's showing you. A man taught her how to fly. Thank goodness a man was there to help her.
Exactly right.
It seemed very cheesy, though, the way that again, because of the writing of the film, it felt so cheap when she did it. And then I think the horrible CG of it. I mean, the Man of Steel looked fine for whatever reason, even though, you know, the CG, it still looked CG-like in that movie. But, I mean, Zack Snyder knows how to film action sequences. So even though you can tell it's CG in that movie, it's stylized in a way, and Zack Snyder knows how to make it look good. So it still
just can't
really
do the talky parts.
Yeah.
Right?
But in this movie, it just looked like Gal Gadot in front of a green screen flailing her arms around, and it looked so cheesy, and it was such, like, but not in a good 80s way. It was cheesy in the worst way, and it really took away.
There was one action movie moment in the whole movie where I was like, that was cool. and that was when she's in the tank chase scene where she's
underneath the tank.
She's underneath the tank and she basically like whatever pushes down to flip the car. Like I thought, or the truck. I thought that was cool. And the, but beyond that, like,
but that whole tank chase sequence looked so terrible.
It's real bad.
It did.
It's real
when they would
bad.
Zoom in real close on a car, a guy clearly on a set with a green screen, you know, shooting his machine gun, and they would just zoom in. It looked, it was the fakest, cheesiest looking sequence. It, everything in this movie just action wise felt so cheap. It just did not work. You know, but I going back to the mall sequence again, because I want to touch on this. So with this movie, they're all like Wonder Woman 1984 and all these neon colors and it's vibrant and it's going to be
jazzercise.
I thought the whole movie was going to feel like the 80s. But the only thing that was 80s about this movie was the mall. Other than that, once you leave the mall and you look at the city and you look at even the outfits, you know, aside from their not funny outfit scene, like nothing about this movie felt 80s to me. Would you have been able to pinpoint this was an 80s movie outside of the mall sequence?
Except for when they're making a joke about the outfits that they have on. No.
Yeah. This movie did a terrible job of setting itself in the 80s. And so that goes back to my point of if you're going to make a throwback to the old, you know, cheesy superhero stuff and you're going to make it more of a Saturday morning cartoon or make it a, you know, it's a comic book movie, so it's supposed to be fun and lighthearted and whatever. Okay, that's fine, but keep that tone consistent because what you see in the mall with how zany and cheesy and the terrible child actors that, you know, looking back and forth at Wonder Woman, like,
give
okay.
her a wink.
It's
thumbs
just,
up.
It's so terrible. You can tell that, like, what Tom said earlier was exactly the case. They had moments. Have Wonder Woman save the kids and have them wink at each other and the little girl and keep this a secret and, you know, in all these
also,
moments
yeah, like,
that
there's,
they wanted.
There's multiple times in this movie where Wonder Woman, as an adult, is encouraging children to keep a secret.
Mm-hmm. Like that's true.
What?
Don't tell them about me.
Come on. Like, how do they not read how that plays? That's awful.
Yeah, it feels very strange. But once they did that cheesiness, I was trying to kind of get into the campiness. And one of the superhero properties I love the most is Batman 66. It's campy. It's fun. You know, I've got the Blu-ray box set right next to me. I absolutely love that show. So if they made this in the vein of something like that, like even though that was the 60s, but if they made this 80s.
If they made it an homage to the TV show.
Yes.
And that could have been fun, and like, and you'd have given him a pass because it would have been fun, and
right. But if they would have stuck with that tone, but it's like they tried to do it in this sequence, and these bad guys were total, you know, central casting.
Oh my God. You know, those guys felt like they were out of the TV show.
That's what I'm saying.
Like
they felt like
the bad guys in the dream sequence of A Christmas Story.
Yeah, it was like, so cheesy. They did not feel like real character, real people. Those were the most, you know, zany TV, stupid, whatever. So I'm like, okay, I've got to get used to this, but I think they're trying to set this movie in the tone of that. Then let's do that for the rest of the movie.
Well, and then they even show you, like, the other bad guys upset when the one bad guy is, like,
picks up the kid.
And I'm like, so are these bad guys or are they not bad guys? Like, what are we doing?
Right.
Like, those other bad guys would have used that. Even if they thought what that guy was doing was awful, they would have used that as an opportunity to run away. They would have not have stood there in horror and reacted to,
like,
it.
Hey, man, don't do that.
And then Diana ties them together and drops them off the top story of the mall onto
when
a
they
cop
went
car.
Crashing through that car, I was like, they're dead.
And they were perfectly fine. And so I know that people are going to say, oh, comic book movie. Okay, but then play by those rules for the rest of the movie. So they did an insanely stupid, zany comic book mall sequence, but then the rest of the movie doesn't play by those zany rules. She gets hurt and shot and bleeds because her powers are drained, you know? But the humans fell off the top story of a megaplex mall onto a cop car and were not injured.
I got news for you. The banner that they were wrapped in wasn't a sufficient shield to shield them from smashing their bones.
So I can believe one or the other, you know? Are you going to have people, you know, get grazed by a bullet and get hurt, you know, Wonder Woman's going to get hurt. Even Wonder Woman, depowered, that still has some of her power, is getting hurt doing more basic things. Or are you going to have people get dropped off a roof and not get hurt? Like, which rules are we playing by? I get it's a comic book movie, but you establish your world, you establish your rules, right, and then play by it. And so that's another reason why this movie felt so disjointed. And then once we got out of the mall, again, it lost most of the 80s aesthetic, and it lost most of that campiness of it, and it goes into the more serious stuff. And so I just felt like I was going back and forth between these action sequences, like Tom mentioned, and none of it really was together. And then when you got the whole Steve Trevor part of I mean, I guess we should just say, in case people haven't watched this movie, the whole crux of the thing is that the guys at the mall were trying to rob a gem from a front, like a jewelry store was a front for a black market antiquities trade. And so,
which is just ridiculous in itself.
So what they were trying to do was they were hired by the Pedro Pascal villain to
Max
get
Lord.
This thing that he's Max Lord that he's been researching. And so
here's
this,
the best part about that character. She kills him in the comics. Like, Maxwell Lord is like a low level telepath. In the comics, he's actually the guy who ends up funding like the Justice League International, which is like the B Squad. If you've never read that book, I cannot recommend it enough. It is basically a comedy with Justice League characters, and he has like low level mind control. He takes control of Superman, and Diana is forced to snap his neck, and it leads to like this big like crisis, no pun intended, in the DC universe, because Diana does this on national TV, and her motivation is like, I don't have a choice. Like, if he takes control of the most powerful being on the planet, we are screwed. So she snaps his neck on live TV.
Yeah, it's so an interesting
question. I was like, oh man, when they announced Pedro Pascal as Maxwell Lord, I was like, huh, I wonder if they're going to even bother trying to do that, and they don't. Like, they,
and they could have, because
so
he's
ridiculous.
Being broadcast
national TV.
He's on the entire world, right? So anyway, going back real quick, I want to explain
while we're on Max Lord here. Like, so the way they're playing him, Donald Trump, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, like, he even looks like him.
Really? Yep. I never picked up on that.
Here's what Donald Trump looked like in like 1983.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean,
same hairstyle, same everything.
I mean,
it's the 80s, though, so 80s businessman.
Look at where he's sitting. Like, that,
the hair color, the way he comports himself, the hairstyle, like, that's not an accident. And he's obsessed with not being a loser. Like, that's the biggest insult in the world to him, is if he were to lose at something.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? He did.
Yeah. But I'm just like, he looks like a young Donald Trump.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. But anyway, I just wanted to go back to the plot of this film, though. So this gem that he wants to get, he's been researching, it allows you to make a wish. And so obviously, this guy, we find out he's like a those success gurus that talk about, you can have this life, and I'm rich, and I have cars and women and money. And so he's like one of these like motivational, like, you can too, you know, invest in my businesses. But really, he's a total failure, and he wants this artifact so he can wish to, you know, be successful. And so this gem is the power to do that. And so all of our main characters come in contact with this gem at some point, and they make a wish. But what they finally eventually figure out, and it's funny, I turn to Katie and I go, oh, it's the monkey's paw. And when they said that, I'm like, called it. But it's like this. So this thing, you make a wish, but then it also ruins your life, basically. So
it takes away the one thing that is most important to you.
Yeah, that's how they.
And apparently that's Diana's powers.
That's what they describe it as. So, yeah. Right. So when Kristen Wiig, who works at the Smithsonian, she's given it by the FBI with the job to help identify it. She meets Diana and their little meet cute, and she is just like amazed by how smart and funny and beautiful and, you know, successful that she is. And she wishes that she could be like her. And so she ends up getting strong and powerful. When Diana gets it, she's not really meaning to wish on it, but she's like playing along, and she's like, oh, well, if I had a wish, and she ends up wishing that Steve would be back, of course. And then
rather than bring him back in a person, We bring his soul back.
Okay, but in defense of the movie, the rules of this item is that it's going to give you what you want, but like all these wish things, it's going to give it to you sideways in a way that you wish you never had it.
Right.
So
right.
It's also more realistic. I know we're saying realistic, but his body was destroyed. Rather than having them magically create a body, I appreciate that they put his soul inside of a body because I think that plays better with the rules. Like, that's one thing that I do appreciate.
I don't know. If you're playing with, like, I can bring people back from the dead with this weird monkey stone, why not just bring the body back? You know?
Because it was blown up. I don't know. To me, I feel like it plays better in the rules. I get that you can do whatever, but in my mind, it's creepy. I don't think they should have had sex. I think that's creepy because of the way that they did it. But I like the fact that it did not bring back his blown up body because I don't think that makes as much sense in the world as this thing having the power to somehow put his mind, his being,
or bring his
in
being back.
Yeah, I don't know. So to me, that played better. But Pedro Pascal as Max Lord, what he actually wishes for, his one wish is to become the Wishing Stone. And so I think it was a really interesting concept. Now, while I agree that the writing wasn't up to snuff for the entire film and there were a lot of cheesy dialogue moments and everything, I do really like how the villains were more humanized, as in Kristen Wiig as Cheetah. She is trying to, you know, she doesn't want to be weak. She wants to have confidence. She wants to be successful. She wants people to notice her. Max Lord is a scam artist, and he wants to be a successful businessman, but he's a failure and all his stuff falls through. And so I like how they were human characters who were driven by these things. And it wasn't like, you know, mustache twirling, super powerful villain trying to explode the world.
The Kristen Wiig thing. I mean, she becomes popular when she sleeps in her office and takes her shirt off or takes her dress off and pulls her shirt down, right? Like turns her shirt into a skirt, and like that's they pull a. I mean, it's definitely an 80s romantic comedy trope,
right,
where the ugly girl becomes the hot girl.
She takes off her glasses and now she's
right, and flips her hair.
But
you know?
I think that was also the influence of the stone, though. I don't think it's just because she took her glasses off. I think it's because
she's got a different confidence level that becomes.
That is probably true, but I just thought it was ridiculous that
she doesn't play that way.
Yeah, but it's also ridiculous that Superman can take his glasses off and curl his hair, and they don't know it's Superman.
What are you talking about? That's not ridiculous. That's totally plausible.
If you're going to play by those rules,
I totally
you have
agree.
To.
I think
Wonder Woman too. In this movie, no
right,
one knows
right.
Diana's Wonder Woman.
She's not even trying. So I guess that they are. I mean, we pretty much find out in BVS is that she has kind of kept that under lock and key, and she's kept that a secret, right? Like the scene in the mall where she's smashing out the security cameras.
Right. But at least
Clark puts something on his face.
Yes. How do any of these people? Okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, at least he acts. Christopher Reeve.
There's nobody better. There's never been any better. I just rewatched
the way he
that
sits
scene.
Up with his posture.
Yes,
and acts. Yeah. At least he puts glasses on and changes his hair. Diana. Okay, she doesn't have her Wonder Woman outfit on, and she doesn't have a crown on. Other than that, what does she do? She talks the same way. She looks the same way. I mean, I think it's a bit ridiculous that they try to do the exact same thing with her. I agree.
It is. I mean, it is funny when you think about it, is that Clark walks around with that body in a shirt, and they're just like, man, that farm boy is ripped to shreds. Man, he's very similar to Superman. Like they have a very similar height, build, eye color, hair color. Nah, but same thing with her. Like she, you know, she looks exactly the same with no face covering whatsoever.
Yeah, like, I just thought that was a little.
I put my hair to the side instead of
smash out the security cameras, even though all those people saw her, and then even our characters. You know, these people at the Smithsonian surely have seen someone's interacted with Wonder Woman, and they work with Diana every day. But anyway, right.
The crux of this thing is this is a train wreck, and
well,
you're
definitely,
right.
But
they are lucky that the pandemic is the reason this got sent.
I agree. I think that's the whole thing. But going back to the villains for a second, though, I really like their motivations. I like that they didn't do. You know, Ares in the third act, you know, she's not fighting a god that's smashing things and doing that whole thing. I mean, that was a direct complaint of the first one. it's just a shame that they took away everything else positive, and then
and apparently that wasn't Patty Jenkins' idea.
That's what they said the studio wanted.
Warner Brothers wanted that big fight, and they went ahead and did it.
That's what she says. But so I like the idea that they tried to correct that by giving the villains not just superpowers, but giving them these motivations. And it's like, really, you know, you got to question, are they good or bad guys? Now, Kristen Wiig, obviously, with the physical violence, gets there. But until that point, and with Pedro Pascal, it's like he's an 80s businessman that wants to be successful. You know, he's not killing people. He's not trying to blow up the world and take over all this stuff. But as he gets more...
He inadvertently does it. Yeah.
Right. But he's not... It's not that, again, that mustache twirling world domination thing. And I like that as he got more and more powerful and got into it, it's like his body was being worn down and he needed more and more and didn't realize what he was becoming. Like, there is a very interesting concept in there. And I think what I enjoyed the most about this movie was his character and his progression. Now, again, I don't think it was written as well as it could have been, but I at least thought it was interesting. Like those.
But then they try to redeem him at the end, and it's like, Maxwell Lord is not a good character.
But it was just cheesy.
He could be Wrestling Corner. He could be the Eric Bischoff of this, where he is putting all of the pieces together behind the scenes, and he's your big bad guy.
Yeah.
At some other iteration, right? Like if you're going to set this in the 80s, okay, like. In their timeline, Clark and Bruce, I mean, Clark, I don't think is born yet. Clark, in this world, I don't think he's there to like 87. So Bruce could be on his way as a boy. So she's it, unless they decide to introduce the JS. Now I'm just going off on a comic tangent, but like she's the only hero they have at this point. Nobody else has arrived yet. So you can keep Maxwell Lord as the bad guy, or just make the reveal at the end be that he's the bad guy.
You could, but again, I think humanizing these villains and having you question their motives, and like, I like Maxwell Lord was not besides from being kind of a con artist guy, but he wasn't purposefully trying to scam people. Like, I like that they go back in his past and they show that, like, you know, he started off in like this little tiny office at a YMCA or something, and he's putting out cookies and things. And like, I think he tried to be successful and he couldn't get there, and he kept failing and failing and failing. And so eventually he, instead of completely, you know, and I'm not saying this is right, but he basically caved and he's like, I'm a complete failure, but I don't want to give up on my dream. And so then he started doing the kind of not pyramid scheme. What's it called?
Ponzi scheme
where, you know, you take the people's money and then, you know, bankroll the next thing and blah, blah, blah. So he started doing that, and then it got out of control for him. And he clearly is like pleading and begging. And he's like, I feel like it really got out of hand for him. He didn't mean to. He didn't set up trying to be a bad guy or villain or criminal. And then once he gets this power, because it's the last thing that he has left, that's where it starts to really get out of control, because now he's given power and he wants more and he gets more power hungry and he sees I'm finally a success and I can have everything I want. And so I think it's a really interesting character study. And at the end of the day, when they try to redeem him, I think it works. It's a bad scene and bad writing, but I think
that
it works.
That kid just shows up out of nowhere.
But I think it works in theory. Again, because I don't think Maxwell Lord in this movie and his motivations is a real villain. Like, I think he's a human with flaws, and I think that
There's a version of this that could have been interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
there's also simple things that they just, if you think about it, they don't map out. Like, he has all these oil fields that are worthless, but then he makes his wish, and now he's got all these oil fields that are dry now have oil in them. So what that would really do would cause the price of oil to plummet.
Right.
Because he would have just doubled the supply. And
well, I think it took it away from other ones, maybe.
But
you know,
that's
how
not how commodities work. Like, if you have oil that's worth $100 and then magically I find oil that's worth $100, now our oil's worth $50. Like, that's...
But the monkey's paw device in this movie still takes things from other people. I think that took the oil from other things and then it said that he controlled a majority of the world's oil. I think it took it away.
I don't know. And then the thing at the end where he's on TV for like 20 minutes just repeatedly telling people to wish for something as they get their wishes. There's no way you will ever convince me that over 5 or 10 minutes of him doing that on national TV worldwide, there wasn't one person who wished for him to shut the F up.
Well, the biggest plot here, seriously, there's a huge, huge, huge plot hole in this movie. You know how he's granting all those wishes like you were just talking about through the TV and people gave their wish. Did you notice that his son wished for him to be back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he'd already blown his wish because he asked for his dad to be good.
He granted Cheetah more than one wish.
Oh, I guess that's true.
So he has the power to apparently do it more than once. But
there was like a random DC Comics Easter egg. Like the guy that calls him out, Stag. Mm. That's a thing in the comic. Like Stag Industries is a thing in the comics. That's the corporation that creates Metamorpho. And I was like, man, that is about as deep as a cut. That's deeper than Guardians of the Galaxy. Like that's
well, there's there's Jeff Johns for you there, sneaking that stuff.
Oh yeah,
in.
Absolutely, that's a Silver Age guy. Yeah.
But yeah, so I, you know, the characters, but that's the thing, that it's a lot of really flat dialogue, a lot of really bad writing, and the actors, we know these are good actors, right? I mean, they're Kristen Wiig can be very good, as we've seen.
Well, she's really coming to her own, for
sure.
Be,
is great in Game of Thrones and obviously in Mandalorian. He's had some gut punch scenes that he's really nailed. I mean, we know he's good. Gal Gadot was great in the first Wonder Woman. You know, it, when given the right material, all these people we know can pull their weight. It's just the script was not there, and the series of moments that they wanted were not strung together properly by this terrible script. And so, and that with the combination of the terrible CG made the whole thing fall apart. And it's, I mean, it's crazy when you look online, and I'm not talking about film critics, I'm talking about audiences. It is amazing how few people liked this movie, where it is usually it's like critics versus audiences type thing. Oh my God, the Facebook feed is completely flooded with people just, you know, audiences saying how let down and awful it was. This movie would have had such bad word of mouth after opening weekend in theaters.
Oh yeah. Big time. What did we do we have numbers on it at all?
No, they sat on them. They what was the other movie that opened this weekend? The News of the World.
Mm-hmm.
It made $1.1 million this weekend, but Warner Brothers did not release their preliminary weekend numbers for Wonder Woman.
Did Promising Young Woman come out this weekend?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
So here's the deal with this simultaneous release. Rotten Tomatoes had 1,000 reviews of this movie in the world. 1,000, which is nothing. 200 and some odd critics, 800 people. The only way you can verify it is if you go to the theater and get a ticket, right? So that's how Rotten Tomatoes now tracks, so that you can't just have the, you know, those
trolls,
the actual alt-right troll people spamming things. So if you're going to go to the theater during a global pandemic and watch something you could watch at home, you're probably predisposed to really want to like this movie already.
Yeah, I was
and
in that
so,
boat.
You know, those people are going to the theater to see Wonder Woman in a pandemic when they could have just pressed play. So I'm guessing that those people and the audience reaction is high because they're already going to probably like the movie. But that also shows you how small of a number. That's such a small sample of less than 800 people verified, you know, reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I think the number that watched on HBO Max is ginormous, which is to be expected. I mean,
we're still in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, it's
right. And this was a big budget summer movie that is people can now watch in their homes. And I think Disney was smart to counter program it with Soul. I think that was a smart move. You get eyeballs on your product, and you don't split your audience. Right, you're gonna get it's two subscriptions. It's very simple, and you're not taking a hit. I guess Wonder Woman. I guess it would be Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman in this case was not gonna take a hit because of Soul.
Right. Well, I don't know if you can even see it through that prism anymore, because it used to be if you're a family of four and you want to go see a movie, you know, you're looking at, you know, $40 to $80.
Oh, sure.
You know, so to go see Soul and Wonder Woman in the same weekend was a non-starter. But now for $20 in monthly subscriptions, you can see them both, and you don't even have to see them on the same day. You can see them. You can if you want. So, I mean, I don't know that they even compete in the same way that they did in a theatrical release paradigm, you know?
That's sure, the whole that deal, sense. Right? On demand. That's the whole streaming is yeah. watching movies and television on your time, not when they want to air it on, you know, on cable. So that's the whole thing, is that you've got this convenience now. So yeah, I agree. You can't really compare them that way. I'm sure people, if they wanted to, they would watch both, because you know, they both have a similar, even though this is clearly more adult, but still, it's a superhero movie that's not overly violent, overly with curse words and things. Like, they're going to reach the same audiences, and I'm willing to bet most people watch them both.
And there's a good chance, if you have HBO Max, you probably already have Disney Plus.
For sure. Absolutely.
So yeah. you already have spent the money. And then also Disney Plus, one, is fairly inexpensive, and mm-hmm. it's even cheaper if you did some of those pre-launch deals. I mean, I ended up getting 4 years of it. It came out to like $4.50 a month or something by the
yeah.
time.
Yeah, I'm still not paying for it.
Yeah.
it's interesting.
No, I mean, I got a year for free. I just yeah. wanted to say that. Yeah. Like, I had it. I'm not stealing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, you know, the movie, just the way that it ends is Max Lord is able to take over. Well, he climbs the ladder, which, again, I think is a really interesting premise. He goes to world leaders, you know, he goes to businessmen and world leaders, and he is able to have them wish for things that they want. And they do the monkey's paw thing. Basically, it's like the gem, or he who has become the gem, gets to take something from them, so they make their wish, and then he ends up making go bad for them, and he gets a certain benefit. And he does that, climbs the ladder, he goes all the way up to the president of the United States, who wishes for all these nuclear warheads, and then he ends up getting the power, the command and respect of the office.
Weird, right?
But he ends up getting that, and in trade now, Russia sees that the U.S. has all these nuclear warheads, so now they want to fight. So that's his negative thing. But he climbs up and up and up, and he eventually gets control of this broadcast system, which is like this top secret technology that allows their system to take over any electronic video device.
So he wants to start his own cable news channel. Go on.
Continue.
And so he broadcasts himself saying, hey, I have the power to grant your wishes. All you have to do is wish for what you want. And so he is able to just take on wishes from everyone around the entire world, and he's using that to become more powerful, to heal himself, because his powers are draining on him. So he's like taking their health and their organs and their, you know, whatever. And so all this is happening, and Diana, meanwhile, as we mentioned earlier, her monkey's paw negative effect is that because she has Steve, her powers have been draining, and so her powers are draining more and more and more. Eventually, she has to give up Steve, which is that scene that, you know, we were talking about relating to earlier.
That scene worked.
Because of the first one, it did. Yeah. I mean, because you're like, wow, she loved him. She got him back finally and didn't want to give up. And then she had to by running away. I think, you know, that's one of the more impactful moments of the film. But she
actually, I like the way that worked, is like she's battle damaged, right? She's got bullet holes mm-hmm. and scrapes.
And then
she renounces the wish, like they heal and she's off to the races.
And so I like that she just left. She just did it because
doesn't look back.
You know, tore off the Band-Aid. And so she gets her powers back. But at this point, Max Lord has become so powerful that even with her powers, she can't touch him. He's got the whole world wishing, and he's getting power each time. And so what it basically comes down to is her whispering in the corner during an extremely loud and
so ridiculous.
Noisy scene. I hate when characters whisper during a loud sequence. Like, he'd be able to hear her.
She's
doing the most quiet, but, you know, are you sure that you want this, because blah, 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 blah. Like, whispering to the camera. It's during a scene where it's, like, windy. It's like a tornado's going on. Furniture's flying around the room, you know. But anyway, so somehow he hears her whispering in the corner about, you know, is this what you really want? And he realizes that,
she says, she's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
And
so
now she's been broadcast, like, because the lasso of truth is wrapped around his ankle, she's been broadcasting over his
through
broadcast.
Him. Yeah. And so she's talking to people, and somehow she gets the entire world, the entire world, to give up their wishes. You don't think that there's 2-3 million people that would do that?
Yeah, I don't. And here's why I don't call that one out. It's because she used the lasso of truth.
Really?
Because they could see that what she was saying was true.
Okay.
That they did get, because I had the same thought initially, like, come on. And in the same way that I'm like, somebody would have said, I wish you'd shut up, and right, then they would have gotten it.
The whole world, yeah.
But because she used the lasso of truth, it showed people that what she was saying was true in a way that like at their core they wouldn't deny, so they gave up their wish. That was how
every person
took
in the entire world.
Well, if you buy into the lasso of truth, yeah, then that's what it does, right?
I guess, yeah. I guess though, like the way that, yeah. I mean, okay. In the comic book thinking, that checks out. I guess that's the best explanation I could possibly imagine. So okay, but he eventually is able to see that the everything that he's done, his building has been ransacked by people, and his son is scared and calling for him and everything. And he realizes that it's going to cost him his son, which is the one person that he basically is doing this all for. At the core of his character, he wants to be successful and prove to his son that he's not a loser, and now he's got all this power, but he's about to lose his son, and his son's going to be hurt. He's running away scared. So he decides to clean up his act, and he takes his helicopter back to the White House, and the son comes running out of the woods, you know, convenient.
Just like, where was that kid? The last time we saw him, he was running down a freeway. And then all of a sudden, we find him in the woods.
The lawn of the White House or something, I think, is where they were. Yeah. But I don't know. So he lands there, and they reunite. And again, like in theory, I like the idea of it. I just wish it would have been written and presented better. And then Kristen Wiig, you know, she's one of the many people that renounces her powers. So we see that she's gone back to normal. What's her character name, Joe?
Barbara
Ella.
Barbara.
Minerva,
Barbara, I think.
Okay.
Barbara something. But either, like, it's interesting because the only reason I find it interesting is she is a part of the Legion of Doom.
Hawk and Animal?
Kind of. No. Well done. It's the Road Warriors, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, which one's the Legion of Doom?
It's the same one. They just, yeah, Vince gave him a different name, okay, because, you know, God forbid he.
So I was right. Don't try to correct me.
No, you were right. Yeah. So they kind of hinted that they were building that with Deathstroke and Lex Luthor and then Cheetah. And I was like, we're building to something. And now, I honestly, they just need to scrap the whole thing.
The DC Cinematic Universe is littered with abandoned projects.
Yeah, Ocean Master. I forget that that's even a movie.
The DC movies have been kind of on a roll. We talked about this, that Shazam, Aquaman, as dumb as it was, I mean, it was certainly way better than this movie. Like,
I'd watch Aquaman before this.
Oh, without a doubt. That's not even a question. Like, yes, completely. What was the Wonder Woman, the original one? Yeah. Like, they were on a roll with their movies.
The Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Okay, I'd watch that before this.
Like, 100%. You know, that was what it was.
Yeah, but on top of this, yeah, way better.
Yeah.
You know, and this really just kind of takes us back to that. I don't know. I mean, I know that it's only one, and we had three or four that were at least
decent.
That's
the thing, though, man, is you can make little mistakes. You can make a couple big mistakes along the way because you can correct those. But when you keep doing the same thing over and over and over, that's where you have a problem.
And with all our complaints, we never even talked about the fact that Steve Trevor can apparently fall through a wormhole in time 60 years and know how to fly a jet.
Correct. A jet from 1984.
I mean, right. The way they explained that was just that flying is so intuitive to him that he...
No.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
No. They tried to, though, where he was like, gas, where, you know, it's not... You know,
where's
like
the engine?
He figured
where's the ignition?
You know, flying is everything. I mean, she says so many times in the movie that she's so impressed by flying is so second nature to him, and she could never do what he does.
Let's not forget... This movie opened up with them not letting her win that contest because she took the shortcut. She's mad at Cheetah for stealing that item off of her desk. And then they turn around and steal a jet so they can fly somewhere in it.
I did not like how Wonder Woman's solution was to steal and do... Yes, it undermines...
Steal and then turn it invisible.
It undermines everything in this movie that she turns... Yes. They turn around and steal a jet.
I did not, with all those security people and everything, that really, it did rub me the wrong way. Okay, she works there and she scanned her security badge to get through all those doors.
Right.
She's on record.
There's a record of that.
As Diana has stolen that jet and she had armed guards after her, and that's like a historical artifact kind of thing. Like, I mean, that's a high value weapon, I guess you'd kind of say. It's like a fighter jet. So I don't know.
Like that's I mean, that's an act of treason.
Yeah. Like airspace and stuff, right? Like that's
you can't,
probably a federal.
Yeah, like you have to file flight plans. You don't just get to go flying.
You don't just
get
to go to Cairo.
Yeah, and also I don't think a jet would fly that far.
Yeah, I mean, he mentions in the movie, he's like, you can go from here to there on one tank of gas. Like,
I don't think you can.
Yeah,
because they turn it invisible. It uses,
but also, what's the deal with? I mean, this is basically, maybe it's not quite as bad, but this is almost as bad as a battleship being at a museum and having fully armed warheads on the ship. It's like, why is this museum plane fueled up and working and ready to go?
Yeah.
It hasn't been maintained. It's sitting there at a museum.
That's right.
Why is it just good to go?
I didn't even think, like, this movie is so ridiculous, I didn't even think about that part, where it's like, why would it be fully fueled and ready to go?
Yeah, it's a museum plane. They're not going to just keep it.
And why
it fully...
would the ignition switch be operable?
Why could you even turn it on? Why would it even function properly? Yeah, and again, these are nitpicky things, but in this movie...
Like I said, a bunch of little mistakes, and it just adds up.
Yeah,
I guess we should say
I don't feel like expecting... I don't feel like having someone who last flew a plane in like 1918 be able to fly a jet is a little mistake.
I agree. I think we're nitpicking about like the jet
the fuel
and
right.
the ignition
more.
Switch that works. But yes, having Steve Trevor, who only flew a plane in World War One, being able to immediately figure out how to fly a completely different group of technology in 1984 without a problem.
Because I also would make the argument that if it was reversed, if he was from 1984 and you put him back in 1919, he probably wouldn't be able to fly that plane either.
Nope.
No, yeah, it'd be a totally different thing. But that whole thing at the beginning, that, you know, that cheesy competition with the terrible CG and everything, I mean, it was clearly, it was so heavy-handed, set up as, you know, Chekhov's Amazon
Golden
competition. Yeah, and all that. But it's like, what were they trying to say? I've watched the movie, I guess, 1.5 times. I didn't finish it a second
There's
time.
Not, they're not saying, I was thinking the same thing.
But
like,
you know
they
what I mean? Like,
they're not telling us anything.
But that whole sequence in the beginning was set up to teach us a lesson by the end of the movie. But...
I feel like it was just a vehicle to get us to the golden suit.
No, I know, but clearly there was a lesson. What was the lesson that she learned? I can't really...
Don't cheat.
But she did, like, along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a lesson at all. I think the lesson was they wanted an excuse to show you...
To go back to the island?
Amicia, or however you say it, and...
The mascara.
Okay, the mascara. And, And that was it. Like they were like, oh well, that was a very popular scene. We have to do it again.
That's just crazy.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, they bring back Robin Wright for what 3 minutes, and Connie Nelson for 3 minutes.
But it was such a heavy-handed moment that they must have cut something or changed along the way. Because I get why they wanted to go back there, but her whole lesson thing was such a. Like a bullet point in bold.
Agreed. I think that they changed. The only thing I can figure is that there were some sort of reshoots and they changed stuff in the third act.
There were the Cole Christmas scene is a reshoot.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. But yeah, there was no connective tissue to me. Like where I was at the end of the movie, I was like, what were they trying to say with that scene?
Yeah.
And it didn't work. There was no real through line. And I was disappointed that along the way, she took shortcuts and did things that she was not supposed to do. And she's supposedly was supposed to learn that lesson. I don't know.
Probably talk about the mid-credits scene before.
Yeah.
Which was horrible.
I mean, you know what? I don't think it was horrible.
I thought it was horrible.
If
was
the
so
movie
cheesy.
Had been better, it would not have been horrible.
Yeah, that's
it,
true.
It was so, just like the. It was just like after all that, you're just like, you're not cute. Cut it.
No, it wasn't
right,
cute. That's
right,
the
right,
thing
right,
is
yeah.
It was so winky at the camera. And
well, she literally winked at the camera, right?
Right. So, in the beginning, we were told of the legend of the Amazon that wore this armor for the first time.
And that seemed irritating when she, like, throws the lasso around him to show this. And I'm like, you could just tell him the story. Like, there's nothing gained by throwing the lasso around him. Like, it's like
tell him the story.
Just tell him the story.
We know you're not going to lie about it.
Well, she showed it to him.
Okay, but, like, you could have just told him the story. Like, they make this big deal, like, I have to do this to you, but why?
Right. Like, so he she's the Amazon that kept the Isle of Man at bay, who apparently were the 300 Spartans, while I guess Zeus hid the island. They think that she died, which, I mean, again, Chekhov's story.
Right.
At the end credit sequences
when
they were like,
she sacrificed
We think she
herself.
Died. She never came back.
They made it very clear that it's like, yeah, this person isn't dead. Like,
right.
The way they told it, you're like, yeah, no. They show me the body.
You know? Well, we saw the body. She's throwing beams from smashing children. So we get a shot of a woman walking away from the camera, who immediately I was like, okay, like this is, if they're going to do this, I guess this is the one person it could be. It's Linda Hamilton. Linda Carter.
Well, I feel like they're trying to, like, they're showing her from behind with her long black hair. They're trying to make you think it's
that
Diana.
It could be Diana.
And it's like, but clearly that's not what we're doing in a mid credit sequence. We know how film works.
Right. Especially these movies at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, they never fool you for a second, but you're like, I was expecting, here's the thing, like, this movie, I felt like, I'm really questioning if there will be a third one after
there won't be.
After this film.
I honestly
film.
Don't, there's no way.
And I'm like, they didn't even have a post-credit scene where they set up a villain or another plot point.
I have to believe that Flash is going to reset this whole thing.
Let's hope.
Like that, I mean, if you're bringing back Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck and all of these, you know, if you're doing all of this, if they're doing the multiverse, call her Diana. Like, why does she have to be this? Like, if they're leaning into this multiverse thing, just make her be another version of Diana.
Because
the older
I don't think this plan coincided with their reset button. Like,
oh,
like I
think this was already in the can.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it was at least planned out. And I think that they clearly want to do a third one. Patty Jenkins wants to, Gal Gadot want to make a third one. I don't think they're on board with just being reset and there never be this Wonder Woman existing anymore. So I don't think that this is a part of that reset. But if it doesn't do very well,
it's going to be.
I can see it falling into like, yeah, we're not getting another one. Because how do they just
now if they're now the metrics are different, right? Now the metrics are just, did anybody watch it?
Right.
Right. So like, it's going to get a lot of watch because if you already paid,
it's free.
If you've already paid for HBO Max, you might as well watch it.
Right.
But did it, but I get the Christmas Day watches, but in week two, is anyone going to subscribe to HBO Max after hearing how terrible this movie is? That's going to be the question.
No. I think they got their subscribers already.
It's going to be hard to pull that up, to disentangle that, right? Because they've already announced that all of their 2021 slate's
right.
coming out. So people are probably still going to sign up for all those other movies, and so
but when the question is, when will the memberships come? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is they're going to be able to judge? Do we get signups right before? I don't know.
Oh,
Dune,
right before Wonder
right
Woman,
before
or before
Suicide.
Godzilla.
Right. They're going to know when the influx came, so they're going to see the Christmas ones. Clearly, I'm sure they made millions, if not 10 million, you know, whatever they made. I'm sure they made a ton right here, but they're going to look at week two and after the performance of this movie, did anyone sign up next week, and then
right.
also a month from now, did how many renewed?
But I would say it's really going to come down to renewals, because ultimately you can only play the how many people signed up game for so long. At some point, you kind of hit critical mass,
yeah.
and you're not going to see these double digit percentage jumps in subscriber
yeah.
bases, because you know, I mean, how much can Netflix really move the needle upwards? You know, it's probably about maxed out, so it's just,
I think they're as high as they can go.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but the other thing, I mean, they're also going to do the Justice League, which I think will be another bump.
Yeah,
if they don't already have it, right? And that's the Justice League, I think, is in March.
The Snyder Cut.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think so. So, you know, that's what they want. Is I don't think that they care enough. They just want to get that subscriber rate up, and they're just going to do whatever they can do for the next year. To get that as high, it's never going to come close to Netflix. That's the bottom line. It's not. But I think they're going to do whatever they can to get it that high.
Yeah, I'll be interested because some analysis will come out of the subscribers, I'm sure, at some point. And I think that they're going to have a very large drop off in the next month's numbers. And I think their subscribers, in the next month are going to be very low. Their additions to this, because the word of mouth, I've seen so much terrible.
I don't know that they'll get that much drop off though, because here's the thing. Is this movie a turd? Absolutely. Is HBO Max a turd? Absolutely not. So if this movie pulls you into HBO Max and then you say, okay, that movie's awful, but like, look at all this other stuff I got. Oh, this is worth sticking around for. Plus, I know that I'm going to get Justice League and whatever other Warner Brothers movies are coming
out.
Dune
or Godzilla.
Right. So it's like, I think at the end of the day, it still probably served its purpose, and people aren't going to judge the entirety of HBO Max on a substandard Wonder Woman movie.
It's expensive is the problem. And people, I know a lot of people that have canceled their Netflix and Hulu when they were like $6 a month because they're like, oh, I'm trying to save money. And it's like, this is 15 a month. So yes, is it a great service? But also we watch a lot more stuff than maybe the average person, and they already have Netflix and they might have Hulu. So, you know, to pay 15 a month is asking a lot from people. And I'm just not so sure that people, you know, the general audiences are willing to do that. I mean,
people were watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And nobody was like, you didn't really hear the outcry of like, I can't afford to watch Game of Thrones. And HBO Max doesn't cost any more than it did to add HBO to your cable subscription. And you don't have to have that $80 base to get HBO anymore. So it's like,
but you have 20 other streaming services now. People would cancel when they were done. Like,
yeah,
people
are HBO, you stuck around for Game of Thrones because that was a cultural phenomenon.
And then you canceled it right after.
And I don't think that there's anything like that right now. I think there's stuff that like kind of pop in and out, like The Vow or any of those HBO shows or the shows on Stars, but I don't think there's anything that is capturing, it doesn't have that water cooler moment.
I think it's getting harder and harder to have a water cooler moment.
Well, especially with the pandemic, Tom. Good Lord.
Well, yeah, but yeah, bring your own water to work.
Yeah,
Jesus
6
Christ.
Feet away water.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's getting, things are getting more and more fragmented. And honestly, I think that's one of the sad things about the kind of demise of theaters that we've seen, is that that was kind of the last water cooler moment, these big giant movies. And now we don't have those either. Even when they're big giant movies, they're still living on these streaming ecosystems. But I think that compared to cable, it's still cheaper to
absolutely
scoop up these individual, you know, 'cause before you were paying, you know, $70 to $80 a month and then adding HBO or Cinemax.
Right. And now you're paying $15 and you get it all.
Right. So yeah. I still think economically it's an easier achievement than it was previously. But
agreed.
So I guess that's it for that one. We should probably just talk about what we've learned from Wonder Woman. So we've learned that it's okay to have non-consensual sex. We've learned that you should keep secrets from your parents. We've learned that if you fall in love after losing a loved one, you weren't really in love with them. But it's okay to move on if that man grants you permission. And also,
from beyond the grave.
Right. And if you do have superpowers, you can improve them if you listen to a man. So thank you, Wonder Woman, for sharing all of that with us. Those are valuable lessons that I think we can all take into our everyday lives. So hat tip to Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins.
Yeah. And Jeff Johns,
of course. Yeah. Of course, because the man. I should have listed the man first.
Exactly.
My apology to the ladies. So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and we can all say where to find ourselves.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget, we are available on Patreon, patreon.com/real spoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out and we greatly appreciate it. So coming up on the next one, I guess we will tackle Disney Pixar's Soul. So thanks for tuning in, and until then, Kara returns the Omega Hedron to Argo City.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.